Now, the early members of AA, you know, they were in the same fix. They didn't have any money. And their plans called for, required for some big shot ideals of philanthropy and money. But as John D. Rockefeller Jr., an early AA friend, said, "I'm afraid that money is going to spoil this thing." And a few AAs had reached the same conclusion. And gradually the minority became the majority, as our experience has shown us, that our members ourselves can provide enough to finance AA's proper aim as long as we are informed. As long as the reasons are valid. Because it doesn't take much money for a group to operate. And it doesn't take any money at all to live sober. Did you ever stop and think about that? Yeah. So it's in slightest application, tradition 7 is easily understood when we hear about a new AA group being started with funds from a federal grant. And our quick reaction is, well, somebody goofed. But then we come to the borderline cases. Groups have put on a raffle for the benefit of their group or their central office because the treasury is short, and invite the general public to participate, and buy tickets and have weekly bingo parties, and invite the general public to participate. There is no tradition in the 12 traditions that's taken a bigger beating than tradition 7. Or have dances and invite the general public to participate, you know. Now, these projects would be routine for any other society, but for us, such actions mean simply we've got our hand out again asking non-members for money. Of course, we do not have to ask. AA is now high on the worthy cause list of our members. Our general service office and group politely turned down many, many unsolicited gifts and bequests from non-alcoholic beneficiaries. In tradition 7, there's a note of realism. Handsome gifts may have strings attached. Our conference has even proved a limit of $1,000 on the amount a member may leave in AA in their wills and in that year when it's probated, and it is not perpetual, or can contribute to AA in a year. Now, you can give $100,000 to Alcoholics Anonymous anytime you want to. You get $100,001 bills and go to a lot and lot of AA meetings. I don't mind telling you. But that's not, you know, a drunk wants to write a check for $100,000. He wants the group to frame it, you know. Look how much I gave, you know. And then underneath, many times later on, unfortunately drunk, you know, and all them other good things. But money may pose another problem. If a group treasury grows too fat beyond a sensible reserve, what's the solution? One simple solution that strengthens our unity and advances our purpose, and that is suggested the group give its excess money to AA activities and services. So when our trustees declared for the principle that AA must always stay poor, for the principle of corporate poverty was firmly and finally embedded in AA traditions. There was a group. There were 6 members of the group. And they had a tremendous resentment, so they went out and they started them a new group. And they just knew that everybody they're sponsoring and their friends would come with them. So they rented a place, and the drunks don't go out and buy, you know, 20 chairs and 2 tables. Uh-uh. They went out and bought 20 tables, and they bought 100 chairs, and they just knew everybody was coming. 6 months later, the same bunch were waiting for the drunks to come. It never occurred to them to go get some of them and bring them in. Meanwhile, they're going broke and everything else, and they didn't know what to do, but their resentment was still so great, and their self-centeredness was eating them up alive. They didn't want to admit defeat, so they said, "Now, wait a minute, we got to raise some money. We're meeting Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday night. Well, right after the Saturday night meeting, let's play bingo." And so they had a bunch of flyers, Xerox, and sent to all the AA groups. Cash prizes. Bingo, 9:30. And they were so broke, they just went to the Goodwill store and got some used bingo cards, and they didn't have money. They got some beans to put on the numbers, and they were throwing the balls in a hat and shaking it up. And the next Saturday night, every chair, every table was full, and people were standing up. And the following Saturday night, people got there at 8:30 before the meeting, the 8 o'clock meeting was over, so they moved the meeting back to 7:30. And all of a sudden, they were again to roll in money, and they were doing so well, they just knocked the Saturday night meeting off altogether and got down to two meetings a week. Then there was a one-legged drunk got out of the nut house, and so they got him in there to be the caretaker, and they gave him, fixed him up a little bedroom with a hot plate and a shower, and he was to sweep the place out and see that they had plenty of change and coffee and soft drinks. And meanwhile, they'd gotten a little more affluent. They got modern cars. And he was doing real good. And one day, a long limousine drove up. And four well-dressed men, with their hats pulled down, walked in, looked around, said, "Who's the manager?" And the old one-legged drunk said, "I guess you'd call me that. You got a nice business going here, haven't you? Do you have any insurance?" "What do you mean insurance?" "Well, you know, tornado insurance, fire insurance, catastrophe insurance." And the old drunk looked him right in the eye, and he said, "This is AA. God protects us." They said, "Is that your answer?" "Sure is." Two nights later, the roof blew off. Well, drunk's no fool. One's better, one's good, two's better. So they not only put the roof back, business was so good, they added another roof, got some more tables and chairs. And they started playing bingo twice a week. So they knocked off the Thursday night meeting. That left them one meeting a week. And they were rolling in money, rolling in money. And meanwhile, they were doing so good, the group donated a false leg to that one-legged drunk. They got him a couple of brand new ones to help him kind of work the deal. And then they had four more visitors, and they asked him the same question. He gave them the same answer. And this time, not only the roof, but the back wall blew off. Well, one's good, two's better, three's terrific. By this time, they had so doggone much money, they went out in the country and they bought some land and laid a concrete slab floor, reinforced concrete steel that you can land a DC-10 on, and got one of them Butler steel buildings and dropped the ceiling, had room for 2,500 people. They had a full-line cafeteria. They had Atari machine, marble board machine, poker room, your television room. They just knocked off the Monday night meeting, and if a drunk, you wanted to come out at noon maybe and talk a little AA, they'd put you in a little room about the size of an old-side closet, and you could share a little bit AA. And they were rolling in money. They had four more visitors. They asked them the same question. They got the same answer. This time when it blew up, it blew concrete slab floor, bingo balls, Atari machines, those electronic number boards, roof, table, all the way into New Mexico. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the laws of this land, when one uses explosives illegally, it incurs the wrath of the most nastiest, meanest federal agency anyone could ever have any dealings with, and I couldn't tell you this unless I hadn't had personal dealings with them, and that's the Treasury boys, and that's the people who guard the Secret Service, guard the President and their families, and also the alcohol, tobacco, and firearm boys. And I'll tell you what, if you think the FBI and the CIA is ugly, you don't know what ugly is to incur those people. Well, it got all over the news wires, and it got on the radio and everything else, and one Wednesday afternoon, I'm just sleeping, my day off from my office, and I get a call from a great secretary, Cora Louise. Now, you have to know Cora Louise. And Cora Louise calls me all excited, "David, what's this about an AA group being dynamited?" I said, "Where?" I said, "Cora Louise, that's the third time." I said, "Why are you calling me? Why don't you call Jan out there in West Texas? She's the delegate. Call her. Call her." She said, "David, we're getting inquiries in here, all this stuff. All this stuff." And my God, it got in the newspapers. It got on the Today Show, the Night Show, the Evening Show, and all the news wires and everything else, you know. And so the group saw the error of its ways. So they decided to go back and just be a regular AA group with three AA meetings. And that's been around about 9-10 weeks ago. And they had another staff secretary out there at one of their conventions. And she come back grinning. She says, "David, that did the trick, didn't it?" And I had to call her here about 3 months ago 6 months ago, the group voted to start playing bingo again. Our kind learn hard, don't we? They learn hard, absolutely hard. Now, there's another group. You're talking about beating a group in the largest city in Texas. And they had this group beating a two-story house. But the basket collection never did take up all the expenses. So they had to raise some more money. Well, they had a big room upstairs that was vacant. So they decided to turn it into a poker room, play poker 24 hours a day. And members of the group would volunteer, and after each hand was finished, then the house would take a cut, and that would go down to the treasurer. But they had some rules and regulations. And one of the rules was that if you left the room, those that were sweating the game could take your seat. Well, they had another problem. They didn't have any ladies or men's restroom facilities right in there. They had to leave the room to go to the ladies and men's room, which meant that when they left, somebody would take their seat. Drunks ain't no fools. They made their own restrooms. They opened up the windows. The neighbors start getting discouraged. The leaves of the trees started turning yellow. Grass started dying. And the neighbors were upset. And then one night they had one of them eating meetings, you know, to where if you want to get a crowd there, just tell them you're going to feed them for nothing. And here they come. And it's in a town, and you know, you go to an AA meeting and you walk in, and there may be the chairperson or whoever maybe is a part of the program. You look around, there's hardly anybody there. And when the meeting's over, my God, the room is full. They come at the last 3 or 4 minutes. And so it was in a neighborhood, and they come and they park their cars in people's driveways and on their yards and in their flower beds. And in this town, when it rains, the raindrops are the size of $0.50. And God Almighty, is it no source? It drains right on into the Gulf of Mexico and through canals. And that night during the meeting, it came one of them 3-inch rains in about 45 minutes. And I'll tell you what, and when they went out to go get their cars and their trucks, they were stuck in the mud and the flower beds, and they had to call wreckers to get them out, and it really upset the neighbors. And so the neighbors decided they've got together, we'll fix them. So they waited till the next eating meeting and the big poker game going, and about 2 o'clock in the morning they called the police and they raided the place. Now they not only took the cards and the money and all the poker players and everybody in the poker room to jail, they had a regular midnight meeting going down in the downstairs in the meeting room. They took them too. They emptied the whole place and took them down to the jail. Well, there's always some lawyers caught in the net. So they got the night judge to come down and they pled the case. Judge, after all, they're playing a little harmless poker, penny poker. What do you want, be on the streets? If any of the neighbors' lawns and flower beds or fences have been damaged, we'll make restitution. But Judge, just forget about this thing, and we'll promise you it'll never happen again. Well, they had the state AA convention in that town on Sunday morning. When everybody went in to hear the Sunday morning spiritual speaker, there on the front page of that Sunday edition of that newspaper, in type the size that Japan bombs Pearl Harbor, were these words, Texas Rangers raid AA group for gambling. Well, let's use an illustration. You don't know anything about AA. But you've got an incorrigible, active, problem drinker in the family. The kind that's been out to Las Vegas or to Reno or to Atlantic City or Biloxi, Mississippi or somewhere down there and it's hot grandma's jewels, drunk, gambling, the car, forged checks and everything, and you got them back in there in the back room, drunker than an animal. And everybody says, well, we've tried this, we've tried that. Somebody says, but we haven't tried Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's call Alcoholics Anonymous. And right as you get ready to dial the phone, some nosy neighbor comes in and says, how's that sorry drunk doing in the back room? Well, we think maybe we got some real help. We're going to call Alcoholics Anonymous. And the neighbor says, wait a minute. I'll be right back. And runs home and gets the front page of that newspaper and brings in Texas Rangers Raid AA Group for gambling. Let's ask ourselves this one question. Would we call Alcoholics Anonymous? The answer is rather obvious. This is what we mean when a group gets away from the common welfare and from the message of what we're trying to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, when our trustees declared for the principle that AA must always stay poor, for the principle of corporate poverty was firmly and finally embedded in AA's traditions. Now, when newspaper and other news media got hold of these facts, there was an immediate and profound reaction. To people who are familiar with endless drives for charitable funds, AA presented a strange thing, approving editorials both in this country and abroad, generated a great new wave of confidence in and respect in what? In the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous. Folks, our principles are so fine and so good. They're 100% with nothing but integrity. And it's our responsibility, within our limited capacity and experience, to see that that is not tarnished. By us being members, not hammering on somebody else, let them have the mistake of either coming in here and live this deal and get a little better, or come in here and get sicker than the dickens. AA is designed that way. They either let God, through our program and the power greater than ourselves, do to and with and for us what we cannot possibly do for ourselves, or let them do to themselves what they cannot possibly do and to for themselves. That may sound tough, but that's just the way it is. I don't know about you, but every discomfort I've ever had since I have been sober, I tried to help another human being with my own ego, in my own innate selfishness and self-centeredness. Every time. Because they don't do it the way I want them to do. The only trouble I have living sober today, people are just not doing what I want them to. That's all. And so, because the news media pointed out that the irresponsible had become responsible by making financial independence a tremendous part of its traditions and principles. 12. Thank you very, very much for your attention and your attendance. Thank you. Well, we came through the seventh tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous, and now numerically we'll finish. Tradition 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. You know, as spiritual as it is, the 8th tradition is like the 7th tradition. It focuses on that vulgar 5-letter word that's not mentioned in either tradition, and that word is money. And how many of us had to explain to some cynical prospect, no, I am not a social worker. I do not get paid for talking with you or staying with you while you shake out a drunk. We do this because it's one of the best ways for us to stay sober ourselves. However, this does not mean, of course, that the idea of turning professional has never entered any AA's mind. Now, in the lean years, our co-founder, Bill, did think of becoming a lay therapist to earn money through his experience in helping alcoholics. With a strong push from the group conscience, he soon realized he could never hang out a shingle saying, Bill W., faith healer, at $10 an hour. And so it became clear to the early members of AA that no AA should ever ask or accept payment for carrying the message to somebody else person to person, face to face. Now, you may ask this question, and it's a legitimate question. What about members of Alcoholics Anonymous who work in treatment modalities or in facilities? Are they carrying the AA message? No, they're not. They're carrying the message of what that facility can do, and they're paid by that facility. But an AA is an AA group, and that's where it starts, and that's where it is, and that's where it'll always be, as long as we'll let it. But new questions arose as our membership grew and the word of hope spreading thousands of alcoholics in search of AA. Now, when Bill decided that he was going to go to work for Colonel Towns, he also went back to the group, and the group walked away from him. And he said, Bill, you know, you're the head horse. if you're going to start taking pay and working for Colonel Towns, the rest of us, we're not working. We're going to start doing the same thing. And the next thing you know, there will not be a group. And if there's not a group, what's going to happen to those who are looking for us? And so Bill found out that the group conscience was far more powerful than Bill's own thinking. But as I said, as new questions arose and our membership grew and word of hope spread, sending thousands of alcoholics in search of AA, our first central offices in groups were usually manned by AA volunteers, and now such offices are so busy that full-time employees are needed as well. And naturally, AAs are better suited to such jobs than non-members, but then are these members of AA being paid for doing 12-step work? No. In the office, they're just paving the way for this work to be done, to get a sick drunk into a hospital maybe, or maybe tell them where a treatment modality is. More important, talking to the family about what they can do with that alcoholic, if this is what they want to do, or a problem drinker. AA is very careful not to diagnose anyone as an alcoholic. That's our freedom. That's our freedom to do, period. And telling a shaky newcomer where the nearest meeting is, and they're helping to make it possible for that member of AA or that prospective member A to hear the message person to person, eyeball to eyeball. Now, in our general service office, these office jobs and other assignments, members are actually paid for their business and professional skills. Working at our general service office desk on conference-approved literature, books, and pamphlets, on our grapevine, and they use their abilities as correspondents, managers, writers, editors, artists, as well as understanding AA from the inside and outside. Occasionally, volunteers are given their time for these services, and the main use that we use volunteers in Alcoholics Anonymous is particularly in translation of our literature, our big book, and our other material into another language. It's very difficult to translate the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and our literature in a foreign language, because you can take in our present version of the big book that we are commonly used in the United States and all English-speaking countries. You can change a comma, you can change a word in any line in that book, and you can change up the entire context, not only that page, but that paragraph or that chapter. and as a result of it, and so we use people who speak street language. Now, let me give you an example. You get a letter from a drunk, and he's laying out in Venice, Italy, along one of those canals, and he's sick, and he's throwing up in the canal. Now, this is the only time you'll ever hear me use this word. Not that I have an aversion to using it, but there's not another word in the English language just like it, and that's the word puke. Puking is puke. Throwing up ain't puking. And he gets a letter from this drunk laying out there, and he says, I'm puking in the canal and all this and that. And he sends a letter to our general service office, and they in turn send it over to, let's say, a PhD in language arts, and particularly in Italian. And his structure is perfect, and his Italian is perfect. And he writes back, and he says, I know exactly how you feel. That gas builds up in my eyes, tear, and smoke comes out of my ears, and I'm sick at the stomach. And this drunk reads that letter and says, my God, what kind of weirdo is this? But he gets a letter from one of them monkeys down on the Lower East Side of New York City that speaks street language, Italian. And he writes him back and he says, I know exactly how you feel. I used to puke straight up in the air and it come down and not a drop get on my shoes. And that old drunk read that letter and said, by God, here's somebody that understands exactly how I feel. This is what we're talking about. If there's anybody here that is fluent in Thai, God Almighty, do we need those people? Do you know what the fastest spreading group of people in the United States today with rampant active alcoholism? That's the Vietnamese. My God, they live in, 20 of them live in three rooms and drink like you've never seen it before in your life. And we've got a lot of them in this country. And so as a result, we use them. Now, you take our literature, just to show you what goes through. This is the most popular piece of literature that we've got in our literature rack. We don't know where they go. We can't keep them. And one of the reasons that a lot of us believe that it's so popular, that it's written to appeal to the average intelligence of our members, and that's comic book style. Now, when they're getting ready to put this one out, what happened to Joe? Lewis R., who was the first delegate black in color, and a good friend of Bill's, and they were talking, and Bill was explaining to him. He said, "By the way, Lewis, where are all the black alcoholics?" And Lewis said, "We don't have many in AA," and they didn't in those days. And he said, "Where are they?" And Lewis said, "Well, most of them are in the penitentiary." He said, "Well, we're getting ready to put six men's faces in a bar, and one face is going to be a black face. What do you think about that?" And Lewis said, "Fine, as long as it's not mine." Well, they always print the cover before they do the guts. And it's a four-color press, and I had to go to the artist and the illustrator, and this was going to be a milestone in Alcoholics Anonymous, the first time. And when it came out, my God, when the blacks looked at it, what few, that face was blue, serge black. And they said, "My God, it will offend the mulatta, it'll offend the ones that are not so black in color. Send it back and lighten it up." So they sent it back to the artists and the illustrators, and everybody waited for it, and it came back, looked just like a Chicano. Now, I don't know if any of y'all have been around a neighborhood where they got blacks and Chicanos together. It's like World War VIII. So they said, "Send it back and darken it up." So it went back to the artist and illustrator, and it came out, and this is the color it came out. Not too dark, not too light, just right. It took 2 years just to get that face that way, because AA is all-inclusive and not exclusive, to where everybody can fit in. It took a long time to get a good translation in German in our big book, because there are five or six definitions of spiritual in the German dictionary. And I'll tell you, to find one that fits everybody is just like today, you know, God as we understand Him. And it took 10 years. Whole groups were getting drunk in Holland. And there were a bunch of members of AA of the cloth, which is the religion is more prevalent, the Catholic. And they got interested, and I don't know what it was, they took out every reference to God and the power greater than themselves, and whole groups were getting drunk. And so they finally were forced to retranslate the book, and in Flemish. And today it is a tremendous book. And the reason that I can talk to you about this, and it's not that nothing in special or spectacular about this member of AA, but as I said before, I was a delegate to the World Service Meetings for 4 years. And two of those 4 years, I was chairman of the translation, reprint, copyright of our material worldwide. And I'll tell you what, that is something else in this world. You've never lived till you've attended a Latin American Ibero translation community. And that's all the Spanish-speaking countries. Mexico is the most prolific translator of all of our literatures. They all have what we call a magazine. They don't come out monthly like our Grapevine. Some are quarterly, some are half a year, some maybe once a year, but they all have it. And you attend one of those Latin American Ibero, and they're all hot-blooded to begin with, and they don't like this one's translation, they don't like that one's translation. They get to arguing and fighting and throwing shoes and cussing and everything else, and you're kind of like a tennis match. You're going this way, you're going that way, with little transistors in your ears, listening and translating and everything else, and it's quite an experience. It certainly is. When our correctional book first came out, the delegate from Iceland in New York, have you seen that commercial, that Viking that comes out of the sea? Well, he made him look like a midget. He was about 6'6", and he weighed over 400 pounds. And you couldn't put him in a regular chair. You had him put him in one of those two-seated love seats. And it took half of us to lift him up, to get him out once he sat down. And so we were the first to see the correctional workbook. And he was in the committee of translation, and he looked at me and he said, "David," he says, "can we get this translated in Icelandic?" I says, "Well, sure, sure, sure. Just have it translated, but send it to us so that we can be sure that it is not garbled and it is true the best you can. And sometimes we'll check with translators from the United Nations who happen to be members of AA, who are very, very knowledgeable about translation in foreign languages, because this is all that they do. And sure." And then he looked at me and said, "But we don't have but 100 in our jails and our penitentiary." He said, "If they jump out, they'll freeze to death in the wintertime, and in the summertime, the bugs will eat them up. But you sure we can do it for 100? We said, "You can do it if there's only two. If there's only two." A message to the teenagers. We did not develop it in this country. It came to us from the General Service Structure of Great Britain, which is composed of England and Scotland. Ireland has its own, And naturally, you can understand the reason. And as a result of it, the message from the teenagers, and so the question came up about translation. If you look at it, and he said, well, those particularly from Sweden and Norway and Finland, and they said, well, our teenagers, they don't drive cars. They ride bicycles. We said, well, put them on bicycles. But the wording up above, this is all, that's the message that counts, that really counts. You know, you don't realize the proliferation of alcohol in a little town like, a country rather like El Salvador, that you can put in half of the incorporated city limits of Orlando. They've got 42,000 members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in El Salvador, if you're a problem drinker and you will not go to AA, nobody will have anything to do with you. The grocery stores, the banks, nobody. Nobody will have anything to do with you. All of those little countries, in Panama and Costa Rica, they've got almost 30,000 members of Alcoholics Anonymous. At the last national convention that they had in Mexico, members of Alcoholics Anonymous, they had it in the bullfight arena. Now, that's a good place to hold an AA convention. I don't mind telling you. They're very, very prolific. They had more at their convention than we had attended our convention in New Orleans in 1980. And to go back to this literature, so long about that time, the gal started the liberation movement, you know. And so they got upset about it, about what happened to Joe. So we put out one, What Happened to Alice? And then the only time they ever changed it, if they changed the new one, What Happened to Joe? And that has changed the hairdos, and that's just about it. Well, and it took 2 years to get that face right. Now, wait a minute, some old-timer may interrupt. What's going on here? And Dr. Bob say, let's keep it simple. That's the precise reason our conference-approved literature expresses the simplicity of our fellowship. Unfortunately, too many of our literature racks in many, many AA groups are cluttered up with non-AA literature, and this is what we believe Dr. Bob meant when he said, let's keep it simple, and let's don't louse it up with Freudian Kant principles that appeal to the scientific mind and tradition mind. An AA group ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. This particular tradition is one of the most valuable traditions for a group, to where they're not organized, but they create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they work. Now, the words, let's keep it simple, were the last words that our co-founder Bill from his fellow co-founder, Dr. Bob, shortly before Dr. Bob's death in 1950, and aware that the word it meant our recovery program, Bill later wrote, we need to sharply distinguish between spiritual simplicity and functional simplicity. Now, when we get into questions of actions by groups, by areas and as a whole, we find that we must, to some extent, organize to carry the message, or else face confusion. And confusion is not simplicity. Now, when Tradition 9 speaks of AA as such, it goes to the heart of AA's experience of the spiritual simplicity of one alcoholic saying silently, perhaps, help, and another alcoholic answering, I know how you feel. We're here to help you. And such a relationship could be organized, or could it? A non-member who's familiar with modern business procedures, with the modern email, and with all this cyberspace and all this other stuff, and that's now on instant recognizing principles and electronics today, on personal computers and telephone wires and everything else, they might see the practice of sponsorship as a haphazard operation. That's the reason why it works, because it's haphazard. You can't work with two people alike. Everybody is different. Sometimes you have to talk very nice and quiet to someone. Sometimes you have to holler at them. Sometimes you have to cuss at them. Sometimes you have to get a baseball bat and beat them in the head. It's a highly personal thing, and it evolves about as a result of actual experiences. And or somebody may say, well, why don't you computerize it? And that makes sense. A drunk will come in, and he goes right to the group secretary. And the group secretary says, here, fill out this thing. And what's that? That's a profile sheet. That's your age, your height, your name, your weight, what you preferred to drink, where you drank, who you drank with, and et cetera, and et cetera, and et cetera. And the drunk says, why? He says, well, we've got a profile of every one of our members of the group. And tonight, when we leave here, we're going to take it down to one of our members who has a personal computer hooked up to a computer link, and we're going to type all this thing in, and on the screen, it's going to come out two names, your name and the one who's going to be your sponsor who matches your profile. Now, that sounds electronically correct, but the one problem. The time that name comes up to be that new one's sponsor, the one who's asked to be the sponsor could be drunk. And that's the reason why it's very difficult to computerize the language of the heart and to computerize that kind of a relationship. But in actions by groups, we find that we need to some degree to have some degree of organization. If somebody else thinks somebody else is going to make the coffee, sit on the desk, or if they have a phone, answer the phone, get up the programs, what's the result? No coffee, no answering the phones, no programs. So in smaller groups, many members volunteer on a rotating basis to be responsible for preparing meeting refreshments and et cetera. Some groups elected, all the way from coffee brewers to trustees on our general service board, those who take part in our A service responsibilities or assuming responsibilities, but not taking on authority. And so the problem with a lot of groups is the fact that, and yet with so small a degree of organization, AA does some through some miracle work. And one of the main reasons is that the Tradition 5 and Tradition 2 applies to each AA committee or board as directly as applies to each AA group. And by adhering to the primary purpose and all of its activities, the fellowship retains spiritual simplicity, and to diffuse that purpose is to embroil AA in issues far apart from its true concern, and that's what creates all the complications. In Tradition 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. We believe and we think that the future safety of Alcoholics Anonymous greatly depends upon Tradition 10, AA's principle of no controversy at the public level. Now, since AA has been founded, AA has never been divided by a major controversial issue, as much as some members try to. As by some deep instinct, we have known from the very beginning that no matter what the provocation, we must never publicly take sides as AA as a whole in any fight, even a worthy one. We must also remember, however, that this reluctance to fight one another or anybody else is not counted on as a special virtue which makes us feel superior to other people, nor does it mean that us members of AA who have been restored, are being restored, and who will be restored as citizens of this real world are going to back away from their individual responsibilities to act as they see the right upon issues of our time. I am so thankful that my sponsor early in Alcoholics Anonymous said, David, I don't want to even hear about it. I don't want to even find out about it. I don't even catch you using your name with the two words Alcoholics Anonymous after it for any of your personal gains whatsoever. And he says it's simple. You cannot guarantee to anybody, including yourself, any place, anywhere, that you'll be sober tomorrow, next week, next month, or next year. No. No. If you'll go ahead and shape up and do what you've got to do, I'm asked many, many times, when did economic insecurity begin to leave me? When I went to work and start paying my bills. That's when economic insecurity began to leave me. And so we survive and we grow because we know that AA, we do not enter in any public controversy because we know our fellowship will perish if we do. Because we know that Alcoholics Anonymous is something of greater importance than any weight that we could collectively throw back at other causes. Recovering from alcoholism is life itself to us. And we wish to preserve its full strength because why? This is the last house on the block, baby. Where are we going? It's our only means of survival. Now, the history and the basis for this tradition, Bill got from the Washingtonian movement, a society and movement among alcoholics which started in Baltimore a century ago, almost discovered the answer to alcoholism. And at first, the society was composed entirely of alcoholics trying to help one another. And their membership passed the 500,000 mark in 2 years. When I got sober in April of 1967, AA got started in 35, and that's 32 years later. At that time, it was estimated we only had 385,000 members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And now, it doesn't count the ones that were sober and passed away before 67. But in 32 years. $385,000 at that time. And the Washingtonians had $500,000 in 2 years. What happened? Had the Washingtonians stuck to their one goal, they might have found the full answer. Instead, they allowed alcoholic and non-alcoholics to use the society for own purposes. We have a lot of groups that do that today. And they can't understand why the groups are fragmented. They took violent sides in the slavery issue. Some Washingtonians became temperance crusaders. And within a very few short years, they'd completely lost their effectiveness in helping alcoholics. And what happened? The society collapsed. It's not the only one. We're not incorporated as a legal instrument with which to attack anyone. The only entities that we have is AA World Services Incorporated and the Grapevine Incorporated, because they do have copyright material. No matter how severe the provocation, we believe that continuously since our beginning and today, AA is a fellowship and not an organization. Incorporation necessarily makes it an organization, because we believe that a spiritual faith and a way of life cannot be incorporated. AA can and will survive as long as it remains a spiritual faith and the way of life open to all who suffer from alcoholism. Many, many years ago at the General Service Conference, they were going to try to incorporate AA as a whole. And one of the delegates from the conference was from Gulfport, Mississippi, a federal judge. And Bob Thompson was a tremendous man. He's passed on. A tremendous legal mind. And so they asked him to get up a committee. And he got up a committee, and that committee was something else in itself. One was an ex-convicted bank robber. Another one was a hustler and all this, and one happened to be a minister. And so they appointed it on Monday, Tuesday, and said, Bob, is your committee come up with a solution to incorporate it as a whole? No. Wednesday, they asked him the same question. The same answer was from Bob, no. Thursday, the same question, the same answer. They said, Bob, tomorrow, Friday, the conference ends. We would like to have some decision from your committee. And Friday morning, he got up before the General Service Conference, and he says, our committee has come to a decision, but we need to ask this conference and its members, all the voting members, this one question. How can you incorporate God? And that's the last time that that question has ever come up before the General Service Conference. Because our 12 steps belong to all mankind. But when you add the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous after that, that's another matter altogether. Because the two words Alcoholics Anonymous right above the S is a circle and an R, and that's a registered trademark. And it also means you cannot separate them. And that had to be done because not of the misuse from outside of AA, from treatment modalities in it, but from our own members from the inside of Alcoholics Anonymous. Tradition 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. For those of you who may not or may want to know, the two letters TV have not been added to this tradition. And in order to change a word or a comma to delete or add anything to our 12 steps, our 12 traditions, our 12 concepts of world service, all the groups that are registered all over the world have to vote on it, and a minimum of 6 months' time has to be allowed. It doesn't mean they can't be changed. You say, well, why don't you add the two letters TV? Very simple. Radio is audio, and films are video. Now, the alcoholic who has and is recovering through our program is himself or herself still the strongest attraction that AA has. This is what our last survey revealed. When people are asked what led them to seek AA's help, the answer still most given, most often, is an AA member. And our chances would have been slim if all the members in AA at that time had remained completely in hiding. But many of us have chosen to tell our friends, our neighbors, our families, our employers, our co-workers, our physicians, our clergymen, that we are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when we do so, we are not breaking our anonymity in the meaning of this tradition. We're talking about personal anonymity on the public level. Now, suppose a sick alcoholic never has the good fortune to meet AA. How is he going to find us? His or her search will be difficult if the local group thinks it should be anonymous too. Now, this tradition is talking about personal anonymity, remember. No alcoholic will be attracted to AA if he or she does not know that it exists or if he or she has a distorted, unfavorable impression of its members and its program. Now, our open meetings at Alcoholics Anonymous and our convention, they are the showcase of Alcoholics Anonymous. Period. Period. And it is very, very uncomfortable when one asks their mother or their father or their children or their close friends, non-alcoholics, their physician or their keeper or someone in the community to come to an open AA meeting. And at that meeting, they're subjected to someone behind one of these things. That every other word is the ugliest four-letter word that you can use that we know of in the English language. And they're very confused. And they say, how can you people talk about God and use that language at the same time? And I can understand it. Because that's where we get our members from. From out there. Out there is where we get our members from. Now, you know, I've been here since 9 o'clock this morning. Now, before I got to you people, until I was 18 years of age, I did not speak English. It was cussing, the worst of any kind you could ever hear. And I've been up here since 9 o'clock this morning, and if my memory is correct, it may not be sometimes, I don't think I've used one ugly word, period. It's not that I'm better than anybody else. But to go back to sponsorship, my sponsor and other members of Alcoholics Anonymous, some of you have heard some of those tapes. They cornered me one time, and I had a very foul mouth. And they said, boy, if you want to associate with us, you will not only clean up from the inside, you clean up, period. And if you can't say anything that's halfway decent at night, shut up. Period. And that was tough love. Absolutely tough love. Tough love. Because you see, this is where we get ours from. We don't manufacture, we don't serve alcohol in an AA meeting. It's out there. It's out there. And that's where we get them from, the men of the cloth, and we get them from all the professionals in the world, and from employers and everything else in this God's world, you know? And that's where they get an unfavorable impression of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's distorted. And so as a result, information about AA is being offered to the public through all the communication media, in print and over the air. And on radio, it's easy to guard a member's anonymity. Of course, television, which was not in wide use when this tradition was written, that's another matter. According to our conference experience, a member is breaking his or her anonymity when he or she is identified on television as a member of AA and their face is shown, whether or not their name is given, because it's the open face that is the anonymity violation. And also, it's AA's principle that we do not identify by name or anything else that any of our blood kin and the most of the attached are members of Al-Anon or Al-Ateen. And yet, with this medium, with this vast audience, it cannot be ignored. Certainly can. Now, they've got different techniques which have been employed to preserve anonymity on television, mask screens, backlighting that shows only AAs, the silhouettes, camera angles showing them only from the back. The shadow method seems to be the best. We have all the material. If you're asked to go on radio or if you're asked to go on television, get the material so that at least we're being honest and fair with who we are and what we are not. You see, we're explaining AA. Personal anonymity as the public media not only discourages timid prospects, but they may threaten the anonymity breakers on society by violating the spirit of the AA program and tradition. You know? Now, I'm going to use some practical experiences from my own life. First of all, when Carter and Ford were locked in battle to see who's going to be president of the United States, our country went to sleep not knowing who was going to be president. And every Wednesday morning, I have an appointment downtown at 8 o'clock, Dallas. And I didn't want to be everybody think I was a dummy or anything, because I don't listen to the radio, and I don't listen to television when I get up. That's my quiet time. And I found the best way for me to talk to God, and that's driving 12 miles of freeway traffic at 7:30 in the morning, period. And so I didn't want to, so I turned on the television set, and I'm in my bathroom with a full-length mirror, and I run the hot water, and I have the lather on my face, and right as my razor's getting ready to come down on the right side, I hear two female voices coming out of that television set. One sounded very, very familiar, like my wife, and the other was a strange female voice. And I looked in the mirror and talked to David and said, "You haven't been drinking. You're hearing these voices." So I stuck my head around the wall, and there was this moderator, a non-member of AA with her full face, and here was this other one talking to her with the back of her head showing, and that was my wife. Now, I'm more familiar with my wife's backside than I am her front side. I don't mind telling you. And they're talking about me. And the moderator said, "From what you told me about your husband when he was drinking and those other things, that when he was drinking, he was a nasty, incorrigible drinking drunk." And my wife answers with this answer. She said, "Well, when you're talking about him in that way, you're being very kind." Well, I ran into her bedroom to see if it was my wife, and her bed was made up. Now, we've been married long enough to have separate bedrooms and separate beds. And I'm building up a resentment. And I'm getting on that freeway that morning, and I'm not talking to God. I'm talking to me. And I'm waving fingers at everybody, and I'm cursing, and I'm going down the freeway, and I get to the downtown hotel parking lot, and I park in the garage, and the manager said, "Hey, David, saw and heard Grace on television this morning." I went into the barber shop, and there were four shine boys, 14 manicures, 18 barbers, and a shop full of customers, all waiting. "Hey, David, saw and heard Grace on television this morning." I believe everybody in North Texas was watching that doggone television station, and I'm building up a resentment. And I leave my office, and I get to my shop, rather, and go to my office, and I call my wife. I said, "Grace, saw the back of your head on television this morning, and I want to congratulate you that you were using the technique and the principles for anonymity. But I have to ask you one question. You didn't use your name, Grace. Why did you have to use the first name of the woman that you accused me of being locked up with the last time I was locked up in jail?" And she said, "That's what you call live and let live, Buster. Ha, ha, ha," and hung up, you know. And one time I was on one of them radio shows, call-in shows, we have a moderator, and they usually have a member of Al-Anon, and a member of AA, and an Al-Teen, and people call in questions from everywhere. Some members of AA will disguise their voices and ask trick questions, and you'll get the drunk that'll call in, you'll get the drunk religious fanatic that'll call in, you get those who firmly believe in their religion, "Why, God, why don't you come back to church," and et cetera, and et cetera. This was about 11:30 at night, and I never give my last name, just my first name. I don't disguise it with another name. I never tell them how I make a living or anything else. And there was a little youngster that's supposed to be sleeping, and he was listening to the radio. And about 11:30, he ran in and woke his mother up and says, "Mama, wake up. My dentist is on the radio, and he's a drunk." He recognized my voice. Well, about 2 weeks later, that little monster had an appointment with me. And his mother come dragging him in, and she said, "Now, before you start on your little patient this morning, I need to ask you a question. How long you been sober in AA?" And I said, "Why?" And she told me about he recognized my voice. At that time, it was 12 years. She says, "I would like for you to know that that little patient you're working on, last December, his grandfather passed away, my father, and he was 19 continuous years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been in AA long enough to know, and I know it right now, that the more we gear ourselves in, sometimes we stray, including myself, away from our principles, the better thing that we hear." Now I'll tell you another one. This is a Lulu. As you know, if you follow baseball, or if you don't, that we've got a major league ball club there between Dallas and Fort Worth. And many, many years ago, when the ball players, you know, when they first started their substance abuse programs and alcohol program and drug program, a lot of them got suspended from baseball for a few years. And one particular club had more than others. And they were there in Arlington, Texas, to play the Texas Rangers. And the sports writers sometimes, they're a little bit cruel, because after all, they're not cruel, that's their business. So they knew that these players are members of AA, or supposedly, by the player's own admission, because it had been publicized. So they were interviewing them, and they said, well, are you still going to AA meetings? Oh, yes. Do you go to meetings at home? Oh, yes. Do you go to meetings when you're traveling on the road playing out-of-town games? Oh, yes. And they say, how do you like the meetings when you go out of town? Are you ready for this answer? One of them said, we love them because that's where you find all the hot bras. Well, I'll admit we've got a few that are overcooked in Alcoholics Anonymous, but we know that is not true. Not true. Well, what do? In AA, you never have to defend the truth. But in this particular instance, it wasn't my ego. I picked up the phone and I called the editor and the owner of that newspaper. It was a chain, but he was the head dog. I said, have you read your sports page this morning? He says, no. I says, you read the front page and call me back. And he called me back. He said, David, my God, how did that happen? I says, do you know that every September, every newspaper with a circulation of 50,000 or more, whether it be daily or whatever the frequency of its publication, and also all the major magazines and all of the television networks, including our public television, and all the major and radio stations all over the United States and Canada, they receive a letter from our public information desk in our general service office explaining cooperation with our traditions and the reason for it. He said, no. I says, naturally you don't know. You're what we call in Alcoholics Anonymous a social member of AA. You never come to your meetings. You may come when you celebrate your birthday. If you bring somebody to AA, you bring them in and say, now you sit with so-and-so over there, or so over there. They're always here. I've got something else to be. The only time you get together with members of AA is where you have this private invitational party for coffee and cake. No, you're what we call a social member of AA. I said, I have a copy. Would you like for me to send it to you? And you have it then copied and circulated to all the heads of your departments of your newspaper. He says, would you do that? And I did. And from that time, we never had an anonymity break in that newspaper. Naturally, 2 years later, it went broke and they closed their doors. But that wasn't the reason that they closed their doors. Now, there are about 8 AA groups within a long gunshot from that baseball stadium. And they're club-type meeting places. And their phones were ringing 24 hours a day, wanting to know when the meetings start. And this is from the general public, to where they can come and meet all the hot bras. Yeah. Little things like that, you know. Yeah. Now, I know that you can turn on the talk shows today, whether it be morning, afternoon or night. And if you watch them very frequently, you'll see a member of Alcoholics Anonymous full face with their name. Now, it's not somebody that's been sober 35 or 40 years, never. That's too bland. They have to someone, either an athlete or in the performing arts, or someone of that nature that's writing a book or something. And they said, yeah, you're a member of AA, fine, you're sober. But have you ever heard the moderator ask that particular member to explain, well, tell us a little bit about what AA is? They can't. Because if they knew what AA was, they would not be on the public television with their full face and their name shown as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And usually they'll have, now, oh, by the way, your new film is coming out, isn't it? Everybody go see it. We understand it's great. And they'll hold up some books. And it's this new book you've written, you know. But never do you see someone that's been sober 30, 35, 40, 45, 50 years on the public media. Someone who has affected God knows how many more lives than people will ever, ever, ever be realized. You see, it's the fragility. And then if you'll follow up on those so-called, quote, celebrities, it's not long before you see their picture on the front page once again being admitted to a hospital for drunkenness or overdose or whatever the situation is. That's a fragility when we get up and we tell anyone that we're members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Period. Because we don't know whether we'll be sober or not along the line. Because you see, because tradition 11 is certainly a constant reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. We have found by our experience that it is better to let our attraction and let our friends recommend us. Tradition 11 represents more than a sound public relations, although these are not the exact words in the tradition 11 in a long form. It's better to let our friends recommend us than for us going around and blowing our horn how great we are. Because it's certainly a constant reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. But it also implies that each member ought to become an active guardian of our fellowship in its relations with the general public. I could talk for hours on this particular tradition. I could talk about the plus, and I can talk about the minuses, but morally about the minuses. And it's not to personally run down anyone, it's just to remind us all, that we've been given a tremendous gift, life itself. And we would be derelict if we're not willing to pass it on in the manner in which it's been so lovingly and freely given to each and every one of us. We paid our dues before we got here. And we continue to, this is old-timey AA, every meeting we go to, every time we talk with one another, we're paying another premium on our insurance policy. Because all we have is a daily reprieve that's contingent upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Because AA tells us exactly when we're going to get drunk again. AA tells us we do not know when the obsession to drink will return, but we know that it will. And if we're not on solid spiritual grounds at that time, then it may be too late. As we have seen, anonymity is a protective coat that covers our whole society. It is more than another dimension. We don't want to advertise our program as a promotional campaign, nor as a circus, identifying only the noted people that are in AA, noted on the outside world. But it is more protection. It has another dimension, a spiritual significance. And this leads to Tradition 12. Tradition 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Let us always try to remember that anonymity, not taking credit for our own or others' recovery, is humility at work. You see, if I'm going to take credit for getting another human being sober, then I have to take the full credit if they get drunk again. Anonymity, as we observe it in AA, is at root a very simple expression of humility. When we use our 12 steps to recover from alcoholism, we're each trying to achieve real humility, to put ourselves and our self-respect on a solid base rather than fantasies and fictions about ourselves. When we use the 12 traditions to work together in AA, we're all trying to achieve real humility as individual members and collectively by recognizing our true place in AA as a fellowship and by recognizing AA's true place in the world. Today, Alcoholics Anonymous is a vital, vital factor in the world, all over the world. Not only the members of Alcoholics Anonymous who are sober today, but also there's estimated that for every alcoholic that sobers up, we touch about 28 lives or better. And that is blood, kin, and emotionally attached. We don't realize the impact. We're a tremendous community cooperating fellowship and recovery program in this world. Because we're all trying to achieve real humility. Tradition 1 reminds us that we are not recovering on our own, that we should control our personal desires and ambitions in order to guard the unity of our group and our fellowship. All of us are just alcoholics together, and we are not entitled to rule on the qualifications of other alcoholics seeking the same help that we have had. In both group and individual activities, we should remember what our full name is. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not Addicts Anonymous, nor is it Addiction Anonymous, but it's Alcoholics Anonymous. It does not represent any established religion, nor is it a new religion. We're not evangelists, we're not gurus, or temperance leaders out to save humanity. We are anonymous alcoholics trying to help other alcoholics. In the rising battle of alcoholism, we ought not let our pride in AA mislead us in linking our fellowship with other agencies in order to bid for a share of their power, their prestige, or their money. And when we go on 12-step calls, we should not tell ourselves how noble we are for doing such valuable work without pay, because the meaning of our 12-step work cannot be measured in money. We have already received advance pay for it in money far greater, and money that's far greater worth, and that's our own very lives. And we were given special responsibilities within Alcoholics Anonymous. Tradition 9 defines these as opportunities to serve, not titles to flaunt in each other's faces. We do not want to sell our program, as I said before, as a promotional campaign, nor do we wish to dramatize it by identifying noted people in AA, thereby implying that this has been for us an individual accomplishment. Tradition 12 reminds us we have something stronger than our human personalities to fall back on. Our principles come first, and thank God they are not our own invention. They reflect eternal spiritual values. And with this tradition, both as individuals and as a fellowship, we humbly acknowledge our dependence on a power greater than ourselves. I want to thank the committee for allowing this member of Alcoholics Anonymous to share this day with you AA's experience, and a lot of history along with it, and this member's experience in living the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. And all I wish for each and every one of you is one thing, and that's to stay sober and help alcoholics to achieve sobriety within the framework of our wonderful and tremendous principles. God bless each and every one. Thank you, and I love you. Love you so much.